It's time to talk basketball here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. The Bucks have been wowing fans this season with stiff defense, lights-out shooting, and a fast pace of play at times. Take a listen from last night's narrow loss against the Dallas Mavericks.
DiVincenzo, the rebound. Brown, Hill for three, the number one three-point shooter in the league, missed it. But DiVincenzo flies in and lays it in.
Did you watch the game? Are you gearing up for Thursday's face-off with the Lakers? You can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. Who are your favorite players and what moments this season are most exciting? Email ideas at WPR.org. Megan Hart is a sports reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. You heard that right. We've got a sports reporter now. She covers the intersection of sports and society, things like economics, race, or the environment. Megan's got a master's degree. She interned at Sports Illustrated, and she's reported on two Olympic Games. She was most recently with the Sheboygan Press, and now she's with Wisconsin Public Radio. Megan Hart is in WPR studios in Green Bay. Megan, welcome to WPR, and thank you for being here on the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome. Let's talk about last night's game. What happened as the Bucks fell to the Mavericks?
Well, the Bucks didn't shoot very well last night. They relied pretty heavily on Giannis in the paint. He had 48 points. But they struggled from the free throw line, and they struggled from three. And that was in sharp contrast to the Mavericks, who it seemed like Kristaps Porzingis and Seth Curry, who is Steph Curry's younger brother, they just couldn't miss from three. They shot 39% at three, and it wasn't all bad for the Bucks. They did try to put together a comeback at the end there. We heard some Dante DiVincenzo highlights in that clip you just played. He had 10 rebounds, and he's been playing well, so that's kind of a bright spot for the Bucks. Kyle Korver had 17 points, so. So they tried to get it together at the end there, but I know it's kind of disappointing because they had won 18 straight. A lot of people, I think, were hoping that they would be going for 20 against the Lakers on Thursday, which would tie their franchise record. But we can't discount 18. That's still, you know, not something that happens every season. So it was quite a streak by the Bucks.
And you dropped the name Giannis. Of course, that's Bucks superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had some 48 points last night. I mean, there's a reason that the Bucks rely on him.
Yeah, he is. He's just a great player. He was last year's MVP. He's certainly the leader of this team in terms of both play on the court and also attitude. He wants to win every single game. So he's been a big part of this streak that the Bucks have had going. He's a very special player.
And he's been talking about this streak with people in the media. Let's go ahead and listen to a press conference last week where superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo compared his first season with the Bucks to this year's season.
It's amazing. You know, my rookie year, we won 15 games. Now we got 15 in a row, and we can still extend it. But at the end of the day, you know, the job's not done. We got to keep playing hard. We got to keep playing together. We got to keep improving individually, keep improving as a team. And we have a long way to go,
You know, you heard what you talked about, that wanting to win every game and really keeping a focus on the future. But the Bucks listed Antetokounmpo's health status as questionable last week. He's missed of some recent games. Is he expected to play on Thursday when they face the Lakers?
Yeah, he should play Thursday. He looked good last night. He did miss a game last Wednesday against the New Orleans Pelicans with some soreness in his right quad, but I don't think it was a serious injury. He's played all three games since he's been back, and he's looked very good for the Bucks. So he should be on the court on Thursday, as should the Lakers' big stars, we hope, Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
And the Milwaukee Bucks do face the L.A. Lakers Thursday at the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. What are you looking forward to with this game?
Yeah, it should be a good one. The Bucks and the Lakers are the two best teams in the NBA. they're leading their respective conferences. So it should be interesting to see how the Bucks match up against some really elite competition. They play in the East, and there's not a whole lot of teams that are maybe on their level. So it'll be nice to see another top-tier team come to town and see how they stack up. And I think it's always exciting when LeBron James comes to town. You know, he's one of the greatest players of all time. So any arena he's in, I think that's kind of an exciting atmosphere.
We're talking about the Milwaukee Bucks with WPR's sports reporter Megan Hart. The Eastern leading Bucks have a big game Thursday against the Western leading Los Angeles Lakers. Will you be watching? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Will the Bucks or the Lakers, Megan, be playing without any other major key players, someone like Eric Bledsoe for the Bucks?
Yeah, Bledsoe is out. He's been pretty important for the Bucks this season. He's been averaging 15 points per game and almost 5 rebounds. But he went down Friday with a fracture in his right leg when the Bucks were playing the Memphis Grizzlies. So he is out for a couple weeks. So far, Dante DiVincenzo has kind of tried to step in and fill his role, and he's played well. He had 15 points and 5 rebounds Saturday. And that was against the Cavaliers. Last night he had 10 rebounds. So, hopefully that's encouraging news that Bledsoe injury won't be felt too heavily by the Bucks. For the Lakers, they haven't really actually played a whole lot of games at full strength so far this season. Kyle Kuzma is one of their young rising stars. He injured his ankle in a game this weekend, so he's likely going to be out. And then LeBron was actually questionable to play on Sunday against the Atlanta Hawks. But he ended up playing 37 minutes. He had 32 points. So he looked okay, even though he's kind of dealing with an elbow injury. And then Anthony Davis, who is the other big star for the Lakers, he rolled his ankle in a game Sunday night. And so he has told reporters he's going to try to play when the Lakers face the Pacers tomorrow in Indiana. So hopefully he'll be back to play on Thursday night.
And if Anthony Davis and LeBron James are both in the game, they pose a pretty big threat. I mean, a lot of teams have struggled this season to defend against those Lakers stars. Do we know how the Bucks might approach that kind of a challenge?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. They're a really good team. But, I think the Bucks will have to try to capitalize on a couple of the Lakers' weaknesses. They don't have too many, but you maybe try to force them to shoot some threes. The Lakers are not a very good three-point shooting team. The Bucks also have a good defense, which leads to points in transition, and hopefully they'll be able to capitalize on that on Thursday night, because the Lakers, actually, as good as they are, they're toward the bottom of the league when it comes to giving up points on fast break situations.
During the offseason, the Bucks lost some key supporting players, trades, free agency, even cuts. They also added some players. Do you see any of those new people playing a big part in the team's success right now?
Yeah, the biggest change as far as players that the Bucks lost this offseason was Malcolm Brogdon. Probably he went to the Pacers in a sign-and-trade deal. But the Bucks have signed some players who have been important to the team this year. I think two of the big ones are a couple of veteran players in Wesley Matthews and Kyle Korver. Matthews has been a really important part of the Bucks' defense this year, and he actually he went to Marquette, so he's got some Milwaukee ties there. And Kyle Korver, like I said, he played well last night, and he's a good veteran presence. The Bucks also brought in Robin Lopez, who is the brother of Brooke Lopez, who is they're both 7-foot centers for the Bucks, and they're twins. So that was a nice addition for the Bucks as well. And just one more quick note on brothers. The Lakers actually called up Giannis's little brother, Kostas, from the G League this week. So there is a chance that the two of them could see a few minutes against each other on Thursday.
All right, Megan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Megan Hart is a sports reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about what happens when people can't settle up their medical bills. they sometimes wind up under arrest. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. A report from ProPublica tells the stories of people sued for unpaid hospital debt. They've missed a court appearance, maybe a second court date. And that leads to fingerprinting, mugshots, and coming up with bail money to get out of jail. Our guest has talked with these folks, heard their stories, and interviewed the people who collect on debt. You're part of our conversation. How has medical debt or medical debt collection affected your life? Do you have medical debt? How have you had to deal with it in the past? What did you do? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Lizzie Presser is a reporter at ProPublica. She covers health and healthcare policy. Lizzie, thanks for being here on the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Keely.
You start out the conversation about this looking at a man named Tress Biggs and his family. From 2008 to 2017, they racked up $70,000 in medical debt, and they were sued six times by collectors. What's important for us to know about the Biggs family and their story?
Well, Tress Biggs was working in construction on lumber yards. And his six-year-old son was diagnosed with leukemia. And that was the beginning of their medical debt. It sent them to many hospitals around the state. And at the same time that his son was getting sick, his wife had to quit her job to care for him full time. They became a single-income family. She also got sick. She had Lyme disease, but it took doctors a long time to diagnose it. And in the meantime, she was getting weekly seizures, and it was wiping her short-term memory. And as Tress was trying to work to cover the medical bills, he didn't have insurance for much of his time. They were racking up tens of thousands of dollars in bills. Those bills were not their priority, and they put them aside. The priority was health, food on the table, and a roof over their heads. And what ended up happening was the hospital and certain doctors who they went to see sent those bills to collections agencies, which sent them to attorneys. The attorneys brought them to court, and actually it landed Tress in jail two times.
Where was the Biggs family the last time you talked with them?
They're just south of Coffeyville, Kansas, in South Coffeyville, which is actually in Oklahoma. They live in a little ranch house down there.
How common are stories like theirs?
So what was wild to me was I got a tip that this was happening in Coffeyville. And let me tell you, this happens in pockets across the country. So I decided I would show up to court on, I think it was the first Tuesday of the month, because that's when medical debt is typically collected in Coffeyville. And when I got to the courthouse, Tress was one of the first people I met. But I just asked everyone who was sitting around waiting for court if they had heard of this phenomenon, people who had gone to jail for medical debt. There were 90 people summoned to court that day. This is a town of 9,000. And many of them looked up and started trading stories about their experiences going to jail after they had not paid a medical bill, or family members' experiences or friends' experiences. It felt to me like it was almost an accepted way of life in Coffeyville. And it took a little bit of time before Tress lifted his head and started to tell me part of his story.
Do we know how common it is for people to actually go to jail over medical debt? I mean, that's not something that we typically think is able to happen to people.
Yeah, so I should be clear that if you would speak to a judge or a collections attorney, they will tell you that these people are not going to jail over medical debt. They're right. Going to jail over a missed court appearance. So what ends up happening is that if you're sued for medical debt, you're summoned to the court. If you miss two hearings in Coffeyville, but in some jurisdictions, it's one hearing, the judge can issue an order of contempt, and the collections agencies can ask for a bench warrant. And the judge can give it. And so what you need to find, or what needs to happen, what needs to be in place for this to happen, right, are, first of all, litigious medical providers and litigious hospitals, collections attorneys that are aggressive enough to use the courts, and judges that are willing to listen to those collections attorneys and to issue those bench warrants. And so what you can find is enormous variation within a single state, county to county, where in some places, yes, people are going to jail because they are missing their court date where they were summoned to show up for medical debt. And next door, no one's even heard of that phenomenon. They haven't even thought about it. And so it's happening across the country, but not throughout the country, if that makes sense.
So it's not uniformly enforced, this idea of contempt of court, this disrespect of the law when you don't show up for a hearing?
Well, that's a very good question. So no. So a judge has the power to issue a bench warrant if you don't show up for a hearing, but they do not need to. So that is a judicial decision. And so some judges will issue those bench warrants and some won't. One of the problems is that when it comes to small claims and medical debt collection is that it's not uncommon for us to be seeing very uneducated judges who are in control of the courtroom. So the judge that I was reporting on, Judge Casement, he had never gone to law school. So he was appointed as a magistrate judge with no legal education. In fact, he had never stepped into a courtroom before. And that's not uncommon across America.
It's not uncommon that judges don't necessarily need law degrees to handle debt collection cases. That's
correct.
In Kansas and
correct.
In other states.
Yes, that's right.
How can
not
that?
Not all other states, but many
sure.
states.
Not all. Mm-hmm. How does that lack of legal experience affect the outcomes of these cases? I mean, how do we know how defendants are being prosecuted?
I think that's one of the major concerns that consumer advocates have. What's complicated is that the judges are, in some ways, well, in my experience that I was watching with the judge in Coffeyville, was kind of learning the law from the collections attorneys. And what it looked like was that the collections attorneys have the power, right? The collections attorneys sit at the front of the courtroom with the judge at the dais. Even after the judge has called the names of all the debtors, the judge walks out of the courtroom and the collection attorney is sitting at the head of the room calling up debtors one by one. And so for someone who's not experienced in the law or the legal system, if they walk up to that front of the room and there's a collections attorney there, it feels as if the collection attorney is actually a legal or a judicial representative, right? So it felt in some cases in Coffeyville as if the judge was ceding control to collections attorneys, and they were the ones with the legal experience and legal knowledge. And yes, to be fair, Judge Casement has been on the bench since the 1980s, so he's learned a lot. But he's more likely to be learning from the collections attorneys than from the defendant's attorneys, because we're talking about indigent defendants. And in all my days in that courtroom, I never once saw a defendant with a lawyer.
We're talking about medical debt with Lizzie Presser, a reporter at ProPublica who covers health and healthcare policy. You can join this conversation anytime. Have you ever had medical debt? How did you resolve it? What was your experience with a collections agent? Call 800-642-1234. You can also email us your story at ideas@wpr.org. Lizzie, I'm really struck by the way collectors talk with people in debt. You described that debtor's exam. There's one where a collector interviews a 28-year-old who owed $2,000 for medical care after he tried to take his own life. And in front of this man who is not working, who is dealing with mental illness, the collector tells you the welfare patients are the most demanding, difficult patients on God's earth.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, that was quite a moment. And not only that, but when he asked the defendant if the defendant was ever going to pay, the defendant said, I don't have the money, and if I could, I would. And the collector turned to him and said, this will end when one of us dies. You know, there is a way in which Hassan Plug is a lawyer's name in this case, is trying to use humor, but it's not, I don't know for whom, I guess was my reaction. Does that make sense? It's a very kind of dark humor, if it is humor at that.
Did you hear that in your other conversations with collectors?
No. I mean, this was a very, so I was writing about Michael Hasmuk, who was, he's one of the most notorious collectors in town because he's been there for a very long time, and he's represented hospitals and doctors and veterinarians and dentists and banks and lumber yards. So anyone who owes money in Coffeyville knows Michael Hassenplug, and his character is quite something. But the other collectors I was speaking to had you know their own characters where they weren't making those kind of remarks. But then again, you talk to debt collectors who will tell you that any company who's collecting debt on them, they will tell you awful stories about the things that those collectors have said to them over the phone. And there's no way for me to fact check it. But just being in court suggested to me that there's no reason that they would be lying.
Right. Those experiences for sure. Our conversation continues with Lizzie Presser. She's a reporter at ProPublica. And we're talking about her reporting that details how people in medical debt are sometimes arrested and jailed in relation to the fact that they couldn't pay and were taken to court. You can join this conversation. Have you been sued over medical debt? What happened? Are you uninsured or underinsured? Does this take up space? Do you worry about this? How do you approach paying for medical expenses when you know the stakes? Call 800-642-1234. You can share your story with us. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Up next is news, then our conversation continues. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thanks for being here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow, the full U.S. House of Representatives begins debate on the question of whether to impeach President Donald Trump. After that, they'll vote on articles of impeachment. The Ideas Network brings you live coverage from NPR beginning at 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning. Now, it's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. We call it bad debt when a person can't or won't pay for something they received. That includes medical treatment. And last year, Wisconsin hospitals saw a jump of almost 8% in the amount of bad debt and charity care costs. That's $1.2 billion in uncompensated care. And sometimes they sue for it, and law enforcement arrest people who don't show up to court. What questions do you have about medical debt? Have you ever struggled to pay your hospital bills or other health care costs? What do you want people to know about your experience? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Lizzie Presser. She reports for ProPublica, and she's covering what happens when people are in debt for health care. Lizzie, the New York Times reports that a nonprofit children's hospital in Milwaukee sued more patients in 2018 than it did the entire previous decade. This hospital is not alone. I mean, lawsuits over medical bills are on the rise. What's happening?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think hospitals will say that more and more individual patients owe money to these hospitals because of high deductible health insurance plans. So because of the amount of money they need to pay before their insurance plans start covering them. And then if you talk to consumer advocates and debt collection experts, they'll tell you who this is affecting. And that's low and middle income customers, low and middle income patients who may not be able to afford those fees. And they're the ones who are being sued, called into court, and in the worst cases, sent to jail.
And I mean, it is true, though, that hospitals, medical systems, some do sue patients. Not all of them do. And many times we also see hospitals sometimes at the same time, you know, absorbing some of the cost of care for patients who couldn't otherwise afford treatment. Right. I mean, that happens, too.
It happens all the time. And one of the things that was interesting about Coffeyville was that some of these patients had been to a nearby hospital, which had recently closed in Independence, called Mercy. And Mercy never sued patients. And so it made me think, like, in the same way that patients really are responsible for trying to figure out the different costs at different hospitals, it also puts the burden on patients to figure out which hospitals in their region and nearby to them are likely to be litigious. It's not very easy to figure out. It means going through word of mouth or perhaps calling county clerks and asking if the hospitals are suing.
Wow. That strikes me in this moment because I feel like when I'm trying to figure out what healthcare my family needs, I'm thinking about where are the best physicians? Where's the best nursing staff? You know, how can I go to the absolute best people who can get me the care that I need? I'm not trying to, I just wouldn't think about the fact that I should call different places to figure out, like, if I go there and I can't pay my bills, will they sue me? That's
unbelievable.
A massive mental burden.
Yes, and beyond that, it's like, why would you want to compromise your care? Because the hospital is litigious. I mean, it's some of the people I was talking to in Coffeyville had, you know, like the Biggs family who I mentioned early on, they've been sued seven times for medical bills. And they realized early on that Coffeyville Regional Medical Center was the only hospital that was suing them of all of the hospitals that they were going to. But in the past decade, three nearby hospitals, they're all rural, have shut down. And so Coffeyville Regional is the only hospital within a 40-mile radius for them. So while at first they were able to choose their care based on the hospitals that were going to be more forgiving or more likely to set up lenient payment plans, now they don't have the luxury of that option.
We're discussing medical debt with Lizzie Presser, a reporter at ProPublica who covers health and healthcare policy. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Want to bring in Brian from Fitchburg now. Brian, thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for answering my call.
Absolutely. What's your question today?
Well, it's mainly on the debt that we incur in this nation is a symptom of our healthcare system. And I was just wondering if the reporter has anything to say about how our healthcare system and the bad debt on our healthcare system compares to other nations. Because my understanding is that other nations that are comparable to the U.S. in terms of economics and other general relationships, they generally cover 100% of the people that live there with nearly better income or outcomes on most healthcare in those nations, yet we charge twice, essentially. So I think that has an impact on why we have the debt.
Brian, thanks for that question. Lizzie, I know this report, you focused really on kind of the opposite, this really micro level of what you saw happening. What kind of context is that in as far as the U.S. healthcare system and how we handle paying for medicine?
No, Brian, that's my understanding as well. One of the things that was interesting when the story came out was that I was seeing comments from people across Europe, really, who were like, how is this even possible? They never heard of medical debt even as a phenomenon, right? And here, when you look at the collections industry, it's an $11 billion industry, and about half of the money they're collecting every year is medical debt. That means that our healthcare system is fueling, right, this debt collection industry. And that was one of the findings in this piece that I found to be so shocking. I mean, we've set up an industry, essentially. We are running an industry on the failures of our healthcare system.
And that also brings up the question of medical debt collection, looking different in states that did not participate in Medicaid expansion, states like Wisconsin. It's worse in those states?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. It's absolutely worse in those states, because in those states, what you are seeing are millions of people millions of people who are not covered. And so they're falling into this gap. They're unable to access Medicaid and unable to afford ACA coverage, and more likely for sure to be accruing medical debt that they can't pay off, more likely to be hauled into court, and then more likely to be arrested for this.
Wow. That certainly makes a big difference then when you look at how this is different across different states. When people are finding themselves up against a lawsuit, some of these debts are, I think we can unequivocally say some of these debts are small. They're almost negligible. We're talking as low as $28 sometimes that people are taken to court because they haven't paid $28. I mean, what motivates that sort of practice?
It's this kind of wide net approach that collectors are sometimes taking, where they're not even necessarily looking at the amount that they are owed, but they are just calling everyone into court who has not been making payment plans. And then you see the $28 fees. Even with Tress, who, when I met him in court, he had paid off his underlying balance of the hospital, but he was hauled in because he hadn't paid off his interest, right? So it's like, as you are sued, you are accruing in Kansas 12% annual interest. And so I was watching people come to court for debts that they had incurred a decade ago, and those bills had doubled with court fees and interest. And you cannot escape it. Once it begins, you are buried.
Right, because it just keeps accruing, getting larger, and then you didn't have money to pay for it in the first place, so you certainly don't have money to pay for what goes above that.
That's right. And then one of the other consequences that we're not talking about here is that it's clogging state courts. I mean, these cases are, when you're being called in for a $28 fee, I mean, it's, you could see it in Coffeyville, too. It's a judge who literally does not have enough time to go through all of these cases extraordinarily carefully anymore.
Wow. What about this fact, though, that hospitals are businesses? I mean, they need people to pay for their services so they can pay nurses and doctors and cleaning staff and afford medical equipment. How does that argument factor into these conversations about collecting medical debt?
Well, you know, that was one of the things that the lawyer for the hospital said to me when I brought him my findings for this piece. And he essentially said that they are doing everything they can to keep their doors open. But he also said that the state decision not to expand Medicaid has had an extraordinary impact on their finances. And so the question is, who really should be picking up that tab? Is it our government, or do we believe that it is patients? And when we see that hospitals are assuming that patients should be picking up that tab, this is the consequence, right? And one of the things that I found so frustrating about this piece is that everything that's happening in Coffeyville is legal. And not only that, it's everyone doing their job correctly. So it's a hospital taking a bill that hasn't been paid and sending it to a collector. It's a collector realizing that they're not getting the money that they need and sending it to an attorney. It's an attorney realizing that they need to bring it to court. And then there's a judge using his power of contempt to put someone in jail.
All right. Randy from Ripon has a question for us. Randy, what are you wondering about this situation?
Well, these collectors, do they get, like, is there like a commission on the amount owed or something? What's their motivation for just casting this wide net, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
Great question, Randy. Yeah, Lizzie.
That's a good question, Randy. Thank you for asking. I've been meaning to talk about this. So yes, some collectors buy debt. In this case, these collectors in Kansas were working on commission. And so all the money, so one of them, for example, Hassan Plug, he gets 30% of the money that he brings in. And so consumer advocates will say that there is an incentive to be bringing them to court because you have much more control over a debtor's finances. Not only can you set up a payment plan that's court ordered, but you can put a lien on their house if you want. You can garnish their bank account if you want. You could garnish their 25% of their income if you want, and you're getting a third of what you bring in. Now, not only is that what's going on if you're not getting arrested, but if a judge decides to put you in jail in Coffeyville, that judge will set a $500 cash bail, cash only. And when that debtor pays the cash bail, the bail goes towards your debt and the collector gets a third of it.
And that's another legal issue we'll get into in just a moment. Lizzie Presser stays with us as we talk about the legal consequences of not paying medical bills, including threats of arrest or time spent in jail if you miss a court appearance. We have time for your questions and your experiences at 800-642-1234. The conversation continues here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. When you can't pay your medical bills, collections lawyers are taking people to court. And sometimes people who owe money, even small amounts, have warrants issued for their arrest when they don't show up, and then they have to pay to be released. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. A new ProPublica report details how agencies are using the courts to get first access to resources that people have when they've defaulted on payments. And there is room for you in this discussion at 800-642-1234. Lizzie Presser is a reporter at ProPublica, and we're talking about the story she's written about debt collectors and people who get arrested in this whole cycle. And Andy from Dubuque, Iowa, is ready to talk with us in this conversation. Andy, thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Hi, good morning. say, I hope this is close enough on topic. The main takeaway I get from this whole conversation is the utter insanity we have in America and the way we pay for health care. I mean, I'm a strong proponent of Medicare for All or something similar along those lines. We obviously are having great difficulty convincing society that we need to do something like that. But let's say we at least, I'd like to just put this out there for maybe our presidential candidates or our leaders in general. Let's say we at least pull in the children if we can't convince everybody to pull everybody in. Besides having 65 and older in Medicare, how about we get like 25 and younger and cover everybody there so the future of our country, our world can start out on a good, healthy, you know, good, healthy start. It's just so much craziness here.
Andy, thanks for that comment. Lizzie, you know, we heard that people didn't have health insurance, but they weren't covered by Medicaid. Kids got sick. And that's where some of these bills come from. So Andy's really speaking to this idea that maybe we're not taking care of kids when they're sick, and we should.
I think that Andy's spot on that we can't really talk about little fixes in terms of reforms for what I wrote about and what we're talking about today, right? Like I could walk you through some reforms that could happen at the court level, but ultimately this really is a conversation about healthcare coverage and how we pay for healthcare in this country. And you cannot separate those two conversations.
And we have another caller who wants to weigh in on that, the idea of, you know, someone has to pay. Steve from Sun Prairie is joining us now. Steve, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously healthcare is complicated, but one of the concerns that I have is that if someone's not paying the bills, who's paying for it? The government doesn't pay anything. Taxpayers pay it. So it's coming back to other people who are already doing what they're supposed to do. I empathize with people that have, you know, medical bills, and I do think we need to have some changes. But I think the bigger issue is the sense of entitlement on debt. When you take debt, you pay it back, whether it's student debt, where people want to say, I don't have to pay for services. In some cases, even medical. I'm more concerned about that sense of entitlement than anything else.
Steve, thank you for the call. And Lizzie, I can imagine you've heard this kind of critique before in these conversations.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a lot of actually the driving force behind some of the collection attorneys who I speak to. It's part of why they do their work, right? Because they feel like they don't want people to feel entitled to medical care. I think one thing that is different about medical debt is that it's often not a choice. So we decide to take on student debt, we decide to take on credit card debt, we decide to take on auto loans. When it comes to your health care, you can't control it. So if you're diagnosed with cancer, which is what happened to Tresbig's son, if you are having seizures and someone calls an ambulance and you wake up and you're in the hospital and you get hit with a bill, these are not debts that you've chosen. And so is that really entitlement when you can't pay for it?
It's a good question. I think that's fair to think about. Thanks for raising the issue, Steve. Let's bring in Jerry from Waukesha now. Jerry, what's your take?
My take is a few different comments. While I can sympathize with certain circumstances and somebody in Oklahoma getting messed over by the system, my family personally, we've had thousands of dollars of after deductible payments that we had to pay. And if you agree to $50 a month and you owe Aurora Healthcare $3,000, they'll take the $50 a month. They'll never bother you as long as you honor the $50 a month. That's what needs to be said and so publicized for the world. And the other thing is, if you don't have insurance, the cash out-of-pocket price is about a third of what the insurance billed price is, because the whole insurance industry thing is a scam. They bill $500 to the insurance, and you can get that same service or that same visit for $150 out-of-pocket.
Yeah,
so there are options and alternatives.
Jerry, I appreciate you bringing those up. Cash alternative instead of using insurance works, you know, if you've got the cash. And if you don't, I guess that's a challenge. Lizzie, what about striking a payment deal with these hospital systems? Have the people you interviewed tried that in Kansas?
Jerry, I'm glad you brought that up. That in a lot of hospitals will work with you to make a payment plan. And if you continue to pay, if you don't miss a single payment, they won't send it to collections. And I think a lot of the people I was speaking with in Kansas, first of all, didn't know this. And second of all, just were overwhelmed and weren't able to pay anything at all at that moment and didn't go forward and try to speak with the hospital about setting up a payment plan or even postponing a payment plan for the future. A lot of hospitals absolutely will work with you, and that's something that any patient ought to know up front, and to make sure that the fear of the bill doesn't kind of overwhelm you so that you aren't going towards the billing folks at the hospital and saying, hey, how can I work with you to make this feasible for both of us?
We're exploring issues with medical debt this hour, and our guest is Lizzie Presser, a reporter with ProPublica who covers health and healthcare policy. And Lizzie, in your reporting from Kansas, when debtors post bail because they've missed a court appearance, they've been arrested, taken to jail, when they post bail, the judge applies that money to the debt instead of giving it back to the defendant. You know, when they do show up in court after that, what legal issues does that bring up? I want to give you a chance to answer that.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So that was the moment in which when experts looked at this, they say, well, this is functionally jail for debt, right? So if this weren't jail for debt, if this were jail for non-appearance, you would get your bail money back. And in this case, the bail money goes towards your debt. And so we're looking at what appears to be debtor's prison in a country that has outlawed debtor's prison. That raises constitutional questions.
All right. And we'll certainly be exploring those and watching them. Michael from Appleton wants to join the conversation. Michael, thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me. I know we're short on time, or you're short on time. I just wanted to say that I think the previous caller's comment about people's entitlement in taking on medical debt, I mean, it just reflects sort of the ludicrous reality in our country that we don't see, or so many people don't see, essential health care as a basic human right. People see it as a privilege, and I just think that's insane. We're one of the only, and especially one of the only modernized countries in the world to have the system that we do, and it leads to realities like this, to people getting arrested for being unable to pay for procedures that, I mean, I'm presuming in most cases these things aren't elective and plastic surgery and things like that. These are, in many cases, I'm sure, life-saving medical procedures.
Right. And Michael, I want to give Lizzie a chance to respond quick. Lizzie, you know, is this a problem with the legal system or the healthcare system? Do we know?
You can't separate the two, but I think that you're... A lot of people who have called in are correct that this is really a problem with our healthcare system. So why are so many Americans burdened with medical debt? Why is medical debt driving our collection industry? Why do we think about healthcare as a privilege in this country rather than a basic human right? Those are the questions that I think I wanted to raise in this article, and I think this article does raise.
Right. We might not have all of the answers to them right now, but talking about it, I guess, first step?
Oh, for sure. And I think the question, I mean, the last caller, I think, has a very good point. It's like, it's not just talking about it, but it's like, if this is the logical extreme of a system in which healthcare is a privilege, is that the system we want? Right?
Yeah. Lizzie, thank you so much for joining us, for raising those questions. Lizzie Presser is a reporter at ProPublica. She covers health and healthcare policy. Her story about medical debt collection is called When Medical Debt Collectors Decide Who Gets Arrested. You can find a link for it at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, Stephen Thompson of NPR Music joins us to discuss the trends of music in 2019. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.